NPR goes into the home and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
A young man and his wife went to a building society and spoke to the clerk. "I earn £20 a week," said the man. "How do we stand for a mortgage?" "You don't," said the clerk. "You grovel."
Could I speak to the landlord, please?
Yes, speaking.
It's about the roof.
Yeah?
We'd like one.
An Irish decorator was painting a house and the house owner came home to find the man rushing about like a mad thing with his brushes. "Why are you working so fast?" asked the house owner. "Well, you see, the paint's running low and I want to finish the job before it's all gone." "I was clipping the hedge with electric cutters the other day and my neighbour popped his head over to say, Peep-o! He only got as far as Peep. A Scotsman was stripping his wallpaper off the walls when his neighbour came round to see him. "Ah, Andrew," said the friend. "You decorating?" "No, moving."
Thank you, Alfred. In this series of 10 programmes, we'll be looking into the humours of home life, how we live these days. And we're beginning with the home itself, the actual building in which one lives. Now, everyone has a different ideal home. For some, it's anywhere they hang their hat, or where the heart is. Others favour home on the range, an old Kentucky home, or home where the buffalo roam. And seldom is heard a discouraging word. It doesn't actually make much difference what the ideal is, because very few of us find it. Most of us end up accepting some sort of compromise, but happily we soon forget the compromise. An Englishman's home is his castle, and settled in the sort of semi he swore he'd never go near a year before, the Englishman is lord of all he surveys, from the dolphin door knocker at the front, all the way over 20 feet of garden, to the refuse dump at the end. And pride swells in his heart when he thinks of home. John Arbuthnot.
"Hame's hame, yet never so hamely."
As a Scottish gentleman. I'm tempted to say ham's ham, be it never so hammy, but home thoughts, either from abroad or from this country, have prompted many people to wax lyrical. Oliver Goldsmith.
"Such is the patriot's boast, where'er he roam, his first best country ever is at home."
And Hannah Moore.
"The sober comfort, or the peace which springs from the large aggregate of little things, on these small cares of daughter, wife, or friend, the almost sacred joys of home depend."
Rather moving, that. Along with the illusion of the ideal home, there's another popular myth, that of a home of one's own. In many cases, a home of the building societies is a more accurate description. But in spite of possible disillusionments, the Englishman is determined to find his castle. And to this end, he gazes in estate agents' windows and pores over newspaper advertisements. It's difficult to know how much to believe of those, huh?
For sale, here is an opportunity to purchase a charming small house at a price which bears no relation to its cost.
For sale, a three-bedroomed semi with attached garbage.
For sale, attractive Victorian family house with guaranteed woodworm throughout.
Home buyers who do their own advertising don't seem to do it much better.
"Wanted, Abingdon. Modern home with three bedrooms and garage space for schoolmaster."
An alternative approach to house buying is to walk boldly into the estate agents, say how much money you can raise, and ask what your chances are. Then when he's finished laughing, the estate agent, he may be quite helpful. Estate agents are sadly maligned people. Bob Newhart describes estate agents as people who didn't make it as used car salesmen. Well, here's his view of how they work.
"Well, hi there. Well, here she is. Boy, somebody's going to steal this little beauty, you know? I I'm not supposed to tell you this, but this baby is priced way below the market. Way below. This the wife, is it? How do you do? Brett Snyder. John Brett Snyder. Oh, look at that. Is that the little baby? How old? 14 months, huh? Boy, she's gonna break a lot of hearts when she gets older. A little boy, is it? Wonderful. You always hate to get him the first haircut, don't you? Well, there she is. Boy, is that a beauty? Hmm? Yeah, there she is. This is what we call rustic. This is kind of your rustic home. Well, of course, that's a question of semantics. You know, when does it quit becoming rustic and start becoming ramshackle? You know, it's kind of hard to... Yeah, this is three-quarters of an acre. Mm-hmm. Well, now, actually, well, come over the cliff here. Let me show you where your property runs. You see the road way down there? That is all your land, all the way down to the road. I mean, somebody's car stalls and they start to lean on the cliff there. You can just say, hey, get off that land. That's my land, you see? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you saw the ad, did you? Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, you've got the view of the ocean and the view of the valley. It's very, very rare, the ocean view. You want to come over here by the cliff. That's the way. Yeah, you just get down, you see? Now, can you see between the boughs there? There's, you see the ocean? Wait a minute. There it is. You see it? You see it that time? People tell me, the people that own this house, they tell me they used to come out here, you know, Sunday afternoon and get down on all fours and crouch and just watch the ocean and all your troubles just seem to float away, you know? Just want to... The valley view, yeah. Listen, you want to boost your wife on my shoulders? Let me show you the valley view. It's kind of a Frank Lloyd Wright kind of feeling the home gives you. You know, it just kind of seems to fit. Seems to flow right into the atmosphere there. As a matter of fact, the back of the house is starting to flow. I think. Yeah. Pardon? No, the people that lived here before tell me that you can hardly hear anything from the sheet metal plant across the street. I even knew it was here.
Bob Newhart being unfair to estate agents. There are other ways of buying and selling houses. Here's an Irish idea mentioned by Jonathan Swift.
I've heard of a man who had a mind to sell his house and therefore carried a piece of brick in his pocket which he showed as a pattern to encourage purchase.
If you're well off, if you're very well off, you might have your house built for you. But even here there are problems. You may not see eye to eye with your architects. Theirs is a complicated science. Philip Johnson, writing in the New York Times.
Architecture is the art of how to waste space.
What you can be sure of is that your costs will rise faster than your walls. Here's Ambrose Bierce's definition of an architect.
One who drafts a plan of your house and plans a draft of your money.
Or more succinctly, Dr. Johnson.
To build is to be robbed.
It's hardly surprising that a lot of people, even rich people, choose to convert an existing property rather than build a new one. A few walls knocked down and suddenly a grotty little two up and two down with no space becomes a fashionable Victorian cottage-style townhouse with no space. And conversions and do-ups can be expensive too. Here's a warning from the early 18th century playwright Colley Cibber.
Old houses mended cost little less than new before they ended.
The solution, which is becoming increasingly popular, is do-it-yourself. The theory being that since the services of skilled workmen cost so much, and since your own unskilled services cost so little, who cares about a few bruised thumbs, flooded kitchens, broken marriages? This theory is responsible for all those elliptical cupboards bubbling wallpapers, diagonal bookshelves, and weeping sink units that distinguish the ideal home of the do-it-yourself man. Let them be warned by a cautionary tale from Hilaire Belloc.
Lord Finchley tried to mend the electric light himself. It struck him dead, and serve him right. It is the business of the wealthy man to give employment to the artisan.
Not that, be warned. The artisan is completely infallible. First, you have to get him to agree to come to your house. Now, this is best achieved by dropping to your knees and proffering £5 notes. But even when it comes, things may not go smoothly.
Was on the Monday morning, the gas man came to call. The gas tap wouldn't turn, I wasn't getting gas at all. He tore out all the skirting boards to try and find the main, and I had to call a carpenter to put them back again. Oh, it all makes work for the working man to do. Just on the Tuesday morning, the carpenter came round. He hammered and he chiseled and he said,
"Look what I've found. Your joists are full of dry rot, but I'll put them all to rights."
Then he nailed right through a cable, and out went all the lights. It's work for the working man to do.
It was on a Wednesday morning, the electrician came. He called me Mr. Sanderson, which isn't quite the name. He couldn't reach the fuse box without standing on the bin, and his foot went through a window, so I called the glazier in. Oh, it all makes work for the working man to do.
Was on the Thursday morning, the glazier came along with his blowtorch and his putty and his merry glazier song. He put another pane in, it took no time at all,
but I had to get the painter in to come and paint the wall. Oh, it all makes work for the working man to do. Was on a Friday morning, the painter made a start with undercoats
and overcoats.
He painted every part, every nook and every cranny, but I found when he was gone, he painted over the gas tap and I couldn't turn it on. On Saturday and Sunday, they do no work at all. So it was on the Monday morning that the gas man came to call.
Michael Flanders and Donald Swan. The great advantage of a home of her own is privacy. In the words of Benjamin Franklin,
love your neighbor, yet don't pull down your hedge.
A man and a woman can do what he likes unchallenged in his own home. It's a place where he behaves quite naturally. And that's true even of our aristocracy. Here's a report from the magazine She.
Blenheim Palace is a famous showplace, but the Duke can often relax enough to throw raspberries to the ceiling in the fabulous dining hall and catch them in his mouth. I know by the applause when he's at it, says the Duchess.
Lovely line. The first thing most people do when they move house is to paint or wallpaper away all traces of the previous occupants. On the subject of paint, let's hear now from Charles Pooter, whose diary, called by its authors George and Weedon Grossmith, The Diary of a Nobody, is a very accurate description of a Victorian Englishman's behaviour in his suburban castle.
April 25th, in consequence of Brickwell telling me his wife was working wonders with a new Pinkford's enamel paint, I determined to try it. I bought 2 tins of red on my way home. I hastened through tea, went into the garden and painted some flower pots. I called out Carrie, who said, "You've always got some newfangled craze," but she was obliged to admit that the flower pots looked remarkably well. Went upstairs into the servant's bedroom and painted her washstand, towel horse, and chest of drawers. To my mind, it was an extraordinary improvement, but as an example of the ignorance of the lower classes in the matter of taste, our servant Sarah, on seeing them, evinced no sign of pleasure, but merely said she thought they looked very well as they was before. April 26th, got some more red enamel paint, red to my mind being the best colour, and painted the coal scuttle and the backs of our Shakespeare, the binding of which had almost worn. April 27th, painted the bath red. And was delighted with the result. Sorry to say, Carrie was not. In fact, we had a few words about it. She said I ought to have consulted her and that she'd never heard of such a thing as a bath being painted red. I replied, it's merely a matter of taste. Fortunately, further argument on the subject was stopped by a voice saying, may I come in? It was only Cummings, who said, your maid opened the door and asked me to excuse her, show me in as she was wringing out some socks. I was delighted to see him and suggested we should have a game of whist with a dummy, and by way of merriment, I said, you can be the dummy. Cummings, I thought, rather ill-naturedly replied, funny as usual. He said he couldn't stop, he'd only call to leave me the bicycle news as he'd done with it. Another ring at the bell, it was Going, who said he must apologise for coming so often and that one of these days we must come round to him. I said, a very extraordinary thing has struck me. Something funny as usual, said Cummings. Yes, I replied, I think even you will say so this time. It's concerning you both. For doesn't it seem odd that Going's always coming and Cummings always going? Carrie, who had evidently quite forgotten about the bath, went into fits of laughter. And as for myself, I fairly doubled up in my chair till it cracked beneath me. I think this was one of the best jokes I ever made.
Charles Pooter captures the essence of suburbia, doesn't he? A lot of houses very close together, and yet each one a family island from which local events can be observed. Watching the neighbours is one of the most popular suburban spectator sports.
Hello, hello.
What's the matter?
Over the road's going out. Shh, say nothing, say nothing. Shh, right, right, look behind the curtain, don't let them see you.
It's the first time they've been out together for ages. Where were they going?
She found out about him and that girl, you know.
Never.
He said he had to work late and she saw them that night in the picture. Shocking, wow.
Was there?
Yes, she was with the milkman.
Our milkman? The one with the big nose?
Yes.
He gets around, doesn't he? There was that trouble with number 28 last month. And there was the punch-up with the husband at 31. You wouldn't think he'd attract women with a hooter like that. Must be the uniforms, you know. Women love uniforms. Oh, look, look, he's opening the gate for her. Dear me, times have changed. I always used to slam it and try and fetch her shins a wallop. Look at them smiling at each other. Love's young bloom. Makes you sick at that age, doesn't it?
He's got his Sunday best on.
So he has. Well, I don't like it much. Shouldn't have shoulders that size with a small head like he's got. Here, come here, quick, quick, look, look, look. Oh, swipe me. Look, look, he's wearing gloves. Look at him, look at him. Look at him carrying one, carrying one. Oh, my word, I'll repulse you. Look at this.
Of course, it's her that's pushing him, you know. She wants him to get an office job.
Which way are they going? Which way, down the street or up the street?
Up, I think, aren't they?
Oh, yes, up. Let's see, up, yes. Oh, yes, they'll be going to see his sister in Acton.
And they always go that way. If they were going the other way, it'd be her mother in Tooting.
Tony Hancock, Sid James and Hattie Jakes spending a Sunday afternoon at home. Marvellous bit of Galton and Simpson writing. Sometimes watching the neighbours can take on obsessive proportions, particularly in relation to their possessions. Keeping up with the Joneses is a very strong motive in many home lives. The domestic calm can easily be shattered by the arrival next door of a new car or colour television, which can lead to a terrible sense of inferiority. Here's a letter from a magazine.
Is there any other reader afraid of the dustman? When they call, I always hide, just in case they say anything about the type of rubbish I put in the bin.
Actually, it wasn't from the magazine, it was Reynolds News. And that same paper supplied useful information to homeowners with this tip on the protection of the family house.
As soon as you know an H-bomb is on the way, run out and paint your windows with a mixture of whitewash and curdled milk to deflect dangerous rays. Soak your curtains in upholstery with a solution of borax and starch to prevent fire.
I'll take an aspirin for the bang as well. I just as well to be ready for any eventuality. After all, home is not just bricks and mortar. It's you. It's an expression of your personality. In the words of Noel Coward,
be it never so humbug, there's no place like home.
The little personal touches that make a house a home. As Hannah Moore said, the large aggregate of little things. And we're constantly barraged by advertisements and colour supplements to buy little things. Little things that complete our home and express our own personalities.
Make the finishing touch the toilet seat. Of polyester foam bonded onto chipboard. Covered in vinyl with an antique leather surface, it is scrubbable in black, white, blue, green, turquoise, primrose or pink at 72 and sixpence. Stuart or black watch tartans, bronze and floral patterns at 77 and sixpence. So is a back Britain model with a white seat and a Union Jack lid.
Believe it or not, that was from the Financial Times. Equipped with such symbols, who can doubt that you are a person of taste and refinement, and a patriot? And since your home is the ultimate expression of you, the best way to demonstrate your taste and refinement is to invite your friends in and show them round. Here's Life and Times in NW1.
This is lovely.
Oh, it is nice, isn't it? Sixpence, that was.
No.
It's a cut glass salt cellar.
I think it's so nice when old objects go out of use and one can still find new uses for them, don't you?
We use it as an ashtray. Yeah. Yeah. You know what you're sitting in?
No.
What? What? Hip bar.
Oh, yes.
Jane picked up 15 of them when they sailed up the old King Edward VII Hospital for Skeptics in Harvard.
She really has the eye, doesn't she, Jane? I mean, its ability to divorce an object from its associations and see it in and for itself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, most people would think, you know, a load of old baths in which generations of unfortunate people had been scrubbing their eczema.
Correct.
But, Jane thinks, God, what a marvellous brain cutie like shape. Mm.
Yes, sir. The marvellous thing about them is the way they don't quite let you relax.
How much were they? Almost nothing, I think. I'd better ask them in a minute. Jane, love. The bath, love. Emma. They gave her a pound to take them away.
Alan Bennett with John Sargent of Virginia Strive. And that glimpse of gracious modern living brings this programme to a close. For the last half hour, Mrs. Muir and Marks have been at home. And we hope you've enjoyed our hospitality. Next week, I'm very happy to announce that Alfred and I are contemplating matrimony. Until then, goodbye.
Frank Muir Goes Into the Home was produced by Simon Brett and Bob Oliver Rogers.